Right, I'm ill. I've got a husky voice. I feel like I'm Barry White as opposed to Ben White. You like that, do you? My darling. I think I could sing better with this voice, but it's not exactly the best podcast voice. So, you're not going to say anything, even though you know that I'm struggling. People are going to think, oh, he's doing this on his own. Loser. Even though, I don't know why I said that, because now you ain't going to speak. You've laughed now, so people know you're here. So, you're going to take the lead with this, with all the films you've seen. How many films have you seen that we can talk about? Please talk. Don't do this to me. It's absolutely shocking. Really? Just going to be silent. So it's just going to be me talking on my own. Feels like I'm having a breakdown.
Roll the credits.
Hello and welcome to a Lemsip sponsored issue of the Views from the Sofa podcast. We're not actually sponsored by Lemsip, that was a lie.
You're drinking an ale.
I'm drinking an ale. But
medicinal ale.
It's a medicinal ale. I think they used to drink ales for colds back in the day.
Yeah, they were a bit stronger than 4% though. They were moonshine ales.
Yeah, they were proper moonshine. Yeah. They'd not the boots. They had like cocaine and stuff in. So yeah, so today is episode 3 of season 3 of Views from the Sofa, the movie podcast. We had to skip a week. Life got in the way a little bit, but we're back and back with a vengeance. And today we've got loads to talk about, actually, because we've got all the films I've been watching and
my one that we can't talk about.
We can't talk about it yet. We're going to wait till next week. So it's only me talking about films properly, like what we've seen recently. And then we've got a bit of a listy one today.
Yeah.
So we'll get onto that, I think, after we've talked about the films. So the what have you been watching?
Sorry, I should take over as hosting duty, shouldn't I, really?
You think that, wouldn't
so,
you?
Yeah, but what have you been watching?
And then you're just going to let me talk about the films?
Yeah.
So that's good. That's
pretty much what you do every other week.
Quality hosting. Brilliant stuff.
What have you been watching, Dave?
So, I've watched 7 that I can talk about.
Should we say what we can't talk about the others?
Yeah, so the reason we can't talk about the other ones is because next week is going to be, or the next episode, we're going to record it next week, maybe 2 weeks away, is going to be an Oscars special. So we've been watching films in preparation for the Oscars.
Yep.
And we don't see the point in talking about them without an actual Oscars episode.
Yeah, that's context.
Exactly.
Current content, context.
That was dodgy, considering it's supposed to be PG-13. So what I've been doing on the site that you'll all know because you all follow is the best of 2018. So the films that I didn't get to see of 2018. Now, we talked about A Quiet Place last time, didn't we?
We did, yes.
So that was the first one that I think I watched of this. But I've watched some proper hidden gems.
Yeah.
So everything from kind of sci-fi to heist movies to personal human drama. So I'm sure we didn't talk about this film. Talk about Leave No Trace?
Nope.
We didn't talk about Leave No Trace. Okay, so Leave No Trace is about a man and his daughter who are living out in the wilderness, and they get discovered, and they're not doing, it's not like they're completely detached from society, they're just choosing to live out in like a national park. So they hunt for some food, they rely on, like, don't have mobile phones or anything like that, but they get discovered and they found out you're not really allowed to live in national parks. So they get integrated into society.
Okay.
And it's about the fact that the dad, who's never really discussed but is suffering from PTSD from war, is not coping with society.
Right.
While the daughter, who's never known it, is like craving it and loving it whenever they get there. And it's just this idea of these two people who want to be together, clearly want to stay together, but starting to realise that it's not going to happen.
Right, okay.
It's a kind of one of those films where nothing major happens. There's no big, huge, dramatic moment. There's no big, huge, dramatic set piece. There's no moment that kind of blows the film apart or you go, yeah, this is the scene. Hmm. It just ticks along at a very quiet but interesting pace.
Is there anyone in it?
Ben Foster is the only kind of key actor you may know. Now, you probably don't know him, but he's one of those faces where if you all went and IMDb'd him right now and saw his face, you'd be like, oh, I do know him. but you won't know where from. He's been in loads of kind of bit parts or support parts in loads of movies.
Okay.
And this is kind of his lead role. I thought it would be one of those that was a shoo-in for an Oscar, to be honest with you, and it just didn't appear. For an Oscar nomination, anyway. It just didn't appear on the list. Because his performance is, it's like understated, and, you know, even though he's got PTSD, when I say it's never discussed, it's because it never blows up. He doesn't have moments where there's a big, huge nightmare and he loses control. It's, you can tell something's bothering him and he's not comfortable, but, you know, yeah, he's trying his best. And there's probably one of the greatest scenes I've ever seen, greatest scenes that I've ever on film. It's just a very, is one of the final moments. I don't want to spoil it, but it's just one final moment where the realization hits of the situation they're in. Mm. And the girl just says five words to this bloke and to her dad, and they just, the rest of the scene's wordless, but you can tell what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and everything that's going on. And we talked, I think last episode, about A Star Is Born and how much it was forcing emotion and how much it felt like they were going, cry, go on, yeah, cry. This had exactly the same feeling. Like, I was in pieces watching this final scene, but it didn't force it.
Yeah.
It all happened so, because of everything you'd seen before, it happened so naturally that even when it ended, it was one of those where you were sat thinking about it, thinking, that's stuck with me, that's, you know, I really okay. feel for these characters. It's a random film. I don't even know if it got a cinema release over here, or if it's due a cinema release yet.
I didn't recognise, when I read the review, I didn't recognise the film.
It's very indie, you know, it's very under the radar. Whether it even got released over here, or whether it's due to be released over here, so it's already been released elsewhere and it's due to be released here soon, it's well worth watching. Like, really well worth watching. I mean, it's not ultra depressing, but it's also not one that's going to get you super excited and engrossed, but it is really interesting and really gripping. So yeah, I loved it. It's just Leave No Trace.
Okay.
Another one that will get you gripped and will get you engrossed was Searching.
Never heard of that either until really? I read the review.
So Searching is John Woo, who is the guy, is it John Cho? Can't remember. But he's the guy who is the one who calls Stifler's mum a MILF in American Pie. Which when I told Kaz that, she was like, oh, no, I can't watch this film seriously.
Yeah, because I remember seeing him in the trailer, actually.
It ages us, and it ages him, because he's a dad, and a very convincing dad, until you realise, oh, he's a frat boy, and he's a teenager. And it's just like, oh, God, really?
Wasn't he also Mr. Sulu in Star Trek?
Oh, yeah, of course he was.
Yeah, more famously than the guy that called Stifler's mum a MILF.
That's what I remember him for. Shows your life. That's what I remember him for, though. Even when he was that, you're right, he's Mr. Sulu. And his daughter goes missing, and the whole film is done through the computer. So you only view it from what is on a desktop computer.
Right.
So it's all done through Skype, done through Facebook, YouTube, some websites I'm sure they've pretty much made up to do with, like, almost like Vine and streaming sites and things where people yeah. go on there and they can be watched and they can just give, like, live streaming video diaries and things.
Okay.
Done through everything on this computer screen, which you'd think would be restrictive, but it's brilliant, because yep. you see the investigation that this dad is doing with his daughter. Now, when his daughter goes missing, he rings the cops, and the cops say, look, we can do all of the legwork, but you need to tell us who she is, and you're going to have to get used to the fact that you probably don't know who your daughter is. So go on the internet, go through her personal stuff if you can, and find out who her friends are, who she speaks to, who she hangs out with. And just watching how he gets through password stuff. So he doesn't know her password, so he works out, well, I should know her secret question. So he goes into a secret question, it links to a different email.
Right.
He knows that email, he knows that. And you're watching this investigation, you're thinking, it's not convoluted.
Yeah.
He's not guessed it, because it's like, well, her favourite colour is pink, and her, you know, she loves unicorns. Pink unicorn, that's it.
Yeah.
He works it out, all of that different stuff. And
okay.
The only downside to it is that you have to believe that everybody lives their life on their laptop.
Right, okay.
To the point where he has to go back through his dead wife's laptop at one point.
Okay.
And she's kind of put down address book, and in the address book descriptions of all her friends and everything, you're thinking, People didn't really do that. Too much now.
Yeah.
But to its benefit as well, every single thing it has is authentic. It uses Google. It uses Facebook. It uses Instagram. Yep. Which you wouldn't think it has a huge impact on watching this kind of film. Yeah. Rather than, you know, logging on to, you know, Super Search.
Yeah.
And then, oh, her social media. Yeah, we'll go on to Instablog.
Yeah.
And, you know, FaceUp. And you just watch it go, oh,
yeah.
I know what it's meant to be, but which other films have had to do because they can't afford to pay for it, where this one does.
Yeah, okay.
And the mystery's amazing. And it has twists. And you're sucked in. And then the reveal of what's happening to her, what's happened to her, and the whole thing is just amazing. It's well worth watching.
Right.
It had me and Kaz were like, no way, oh my God, you know, proper edge of our seat from beginning to end. And again, it was just another little surprise. It's one of those films you keep seeing it on lists thinking, really? Because when you saw the trailer, you thought, it's a bit of a, looks a bit naff.
Yeah.
It's a bit, like, made up. And
it did look a bit naff on the trailers, yeah.
It's a bit like, oh, I can't be bothered with that. So two more to talk about out of that list. One was Annihilation. With Natalie Portman.
Bruce Willis?
No, Natalie Portman. So Natalie Portman goes into... her husband has been missing for a year and he just returns one day. And he's... He's a special forces guy for the army.
I remember that.
Returns one day. He starts vomiting, internally bleeding. The ambulance gets hijacked by some special operative secret people. They get taken to a location and they realise that there is this alien shimmer over a part of America that if you go in, you don't come back.
Yeah.
And her husband's the first one to come back. So she is part of a 6-woman expedition that goes into the shimmer to find out what's going on.
Yeah, I remember
and
seeing
I'm
that.
And I'm not telling you anything else because it's well worth watching.
Is it?
Scary. It's trippy.
It looked crap on the trailers. Like, we actively avoided seeing that.
Really?
It looked awful. I thought the trailer for that.
It's well worth it. It's so creepy and so freaky.
Cool.
But really, like, points proper nerve shredding, proper scary. Like, difficult to watch at places.
Yep.
It does suffer a little bit from, because it's trying to be a little bit, you know, like, who are we and makers of the universe and all the rest of it, that the ending gets a little bit trippy to the point where, like, oh, I'm losing this now. I don't really get what's going on.
Yeah.
But up to the point where things start a bit creepy for a little bit weird for the last 15 minutes or so, I was gripped. Absolutely loved it.
Right,
there are some genuinely scary and terrifying moments in it. It's like a sci-fi horror. And it's on Netflix. So if you can get Netflix, go watch it. I think it was a Netflix movie, so it couldn't get theatric release. So
I remember seeing that at the... Well, I certainly remember seeing the trailer for it.
The trailer for it, you sure?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, maybe it had like a... It might have had a limited one then. Right. Might have they had like one or two nights only. Because I know he tried to go to... The director, who's the same guy... he's done some massive movies. Now I can't remember what else he's bloody done now he's said that.
And you've not bought your iPad.
I've not bought my iPad with me, so I can't look.
That's frustrating.
But the director...
At least we've ticked that box.
Yeah, that's done, yeah. So for everyone playing podcast bingo, thanks for that. But he's done big movies, but when he took this to people, they said, oh, people ain't going to want to watch it. It's too complicated. It's not. There's too much to it. Where actually you watch it and you think, God, people would love this. It reminded me of Arrival, but scary.
Well, Natalie Portman's going to be a big draw for something like that anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
She's sort of a stamp of credibility on something. Ooh. So,
and not just Natalie Portman. It's Natalie Portman's in there too, but so is Oscar Isaacs from... he was the bad guy in X-Men Apocalypse. He was in... Oh, that's it. Ex Machina. You know that film, Ex Machina?
Yes.
The director of
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah. The Ex Machina, I swear it is. The director of that is the one who did Annihilation.
Right, okay.
So big films, popular films, but he just couldn't get funding for this. So Netflix was the place he went, and they went, yeah, we'll do it, and it is where it is, and it was in a lot of best of 2018 lists.
Fair play.
And then the last one to talk about on that list is Widows.
Yeah, I wanted to see that and didn't get to see it.
It's all right.
Is it?
Not it's like very solidly made.
Yeah.
It's got a great cast. It's got a great director. But you're watching it going, I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, everything comes together and you're watching it going, this is very good. I mean, I'm entertained, but it ends and you go, I'm never gonna. It's never gonna make any best of lists. All the performances did what they needed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, the best performance in it is the guy from Get Out. The guy from the lead in that. Oh, I can't pronounce his name, but he is incredible because he plays a scary gangster who just, you know, goes around enforcing for his politician brother. And he's, when he's on the screen, it's, you know, when a character on the screen and you're nervous for every other character on the screen.
Yeah.
It's that kind of role, and you think, he doesn't strike me as that kind of actor.
Oh, nice.
But he's brilliant in this.
Okay.
And everyone else plays their role really well. So Colin Farrell, Viola Davis, Liam Neeson, they all play their role very strongly, but you kind of end it going, all right, that was solid.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to remember it. It's not going to stick with me. It'll be lost in the, you know, the dramas of time. That's it, really. So I'm going to leave it with two more, actually. Two more films to talk about.
Okay.
And they're interesting ones. I'm going to go with the big new release, which was Glass.
Right, okay, so, yes, of course.
Went to see Glass a couple of weeks ago. Was it a couple of weeks ago? Was it only last weekend?
No, I didn't see it last week. It must have been the weekend before.
Must have been the weekend before. So I went to see Glass. Was ridiculously excited ever since, spoilers, the big reveal at the end of Split, that it's all in the same universe as Unbreakable. So it's it Split turns Unbreakable and Split into a trilogy.
That got ruined as part of all the hype for Glass, though.
It did, but I guess the argument would be Split's been out for 2 years and you can't advertise.
True.
You can't. There was no way of advertising Glass without that being ruined.
True.
I mean, it's a scene that it has no impetus on the whole film of Split whatsoever.
Right.
You don't see it coming at all until the very final scene where Bruce Willis is there and someone asks him a question and he goes, "Mr. Glass." And you realise, oh, he's that character in this universe. Oh my God. And then it was announced soon afterwards.
Okay.
There's another film coming.
Okay.
Which brings them all together.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is you watched Unbreakable, you watched Split, and you thought to yourself, I can't wait for Bruce Willis's Unbreakable superhero to meet James McAvoy's beast person.
Yeah.
But that ain't a film. That's a scene.
Yeah.
So how do you build a film around it?
Yeah.
And Shyamalan does an amazing job. The film's engrossing. The film is interesting from beginning to end. The characters are incredible. I think if James McAvoy was playing this character in any other type of film than a superhero movie,
yeah,
he'd be Oscar nominated.
Right.
Because his performance is amazing.
I have heard that. I have heard that he sort of did the whole split personality.
It's split personality. Yeah. He's got 23 people inside him.
Yeah.
And he has to switch from them really quickly. At one point, they find a way to force him to switch. And every time he switches from the different people really quickly, he manages to change his whole body rather than just his voice. So you can noticeably see it's a different person.
Right.
And to do that quick, it's brilliant to watch. And there are four of the same returning people that keep coming back.
Okay.
And you can tell which character he's playing just from the way he sits. So he sits one way and you go, oh, that's her. He sits another way and you go, oh, that's the kid.
Yeah.
He sits, and just that in itself is like, that's incredible.
That's quite cool.
You know, so McAvoy himself in it's a brilliant. Bruce Willis is an action hero again, so it's quality Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And then Samuel L. Jackson is as cool as ever by being as evil as ever.
Yeah.
The problem is, I don't know what I wanted the film to be, and I was really excited for it, and it was never going to meet my expectation.
Right.
But I don't know what that expectation was. It's stupid. I'm watching the film going, I'm enjoying it, but I don't know if this is what I wanted from this movie. Yeah. And then when they're all kicking ass and when the big finale comes, it's amazing, and it's staged really well, and Shyamalan does a good job of commenting on superheroes. There's cool superhero moments. Bruce Willis gets at least two moments where he gets to do a superhero one-liner. Right. And you're like, that is brilliant.
Okay.
That is brilliant. It refers back to comic books again and all the rest of it. But you're just there thinking, I don't know what I wanted, but I don't know if this was it.
Yeah.
It's a very, very, very good movie. It's probably the best way of ending the trilogy, because I don't know how else you could have done it.
Okay.
But it's, again, it's tricky because what you could have done with was having Bruce Willis show up at the end of Split and they have their big battle then.
Yeah.
And almost you don't need a third film for this. But at the same time, there's twists at the end. The third film does make sense. They bring it all together very well. They tie the whole thing together. Yeah. It has amazing links back to Unbreakable. They've done a very good job of using deleted scenes from Unbreakable
yeah.
as flashbacks in okay. Glass.
That's a good idea.
So, because there's scenes where you're thinking, God, the CGI is good there. And you're like, oh, no, it's not CGI. This clearly just didn't have a place in Unbreakable. It does now. And there's characters return. So his son in Unbreakable is an adult
yes.
in Glass. And yeah, it's things like that where you go, that's really clever. Yeah. You know, and it has great links to it, but it's just, I gave it 4 stars. I really wanted it to be a 5-star movie.
Yeah.
So,
how did it rank up there with your other trilogies?
It's, like I said, it ends the Unbreakable trilogy really well, but it's not a perfect trilogy. It's no Toy Story. It's no... It's no you didn't have to speak. I didn't ask a question. It's no Toy Story. It's no... Indiana Jones. What are the trilogies? Die Hard?
Yeah.
Nope. No, I'm not a big... You know I'm not a big fan of Lord of the Rings. We're going to have to do a trilogy podcast at some point to vent my frustrations on Lord of the Rings. So there's one more film. And this this one's probably going to take a bit of talking about.
Good, because I can't find any beer.
This one, by the way, is a lubricated podcast. Or oiled up podcast, as Dave likes to call it. Where we partake in a beverage while we are doing the podcast. Helps it flow better and it's helping my throat. So the last film I want to talk about is called Bandersnatch and it's the Netflix interactive movie. So the idea is, as you're watching, options appear on the screen. You have about 30 seconds to pick the option and then seamlessly, there's no loading, there's no pause, there's no cut screen, there's nothing. Seamlessly, the movie continues down the option you've picked. So the options can be anywhere from what cereal he has to eat is the very first option. So his dad goes, Frosties or Sugar Puffs? You pick Frosties, he's eating Frosties. There's no loading, there's no cut screen. Literally, it carries on. The option stops and then all of a sudden, the scene goes into him eating Frosties. It's amazing. When it was advertised, it's Black Mirror, so it's from the Black Mirror people, it's from Charlie Brooker. When it was advertised as it's a choose your own adventure. It can go anywhere from 45 minutes to about 2 to 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You can choose, there's multiple endings, so there is replay value, but the way it's staged is you can do all the multiple endings in one sitting. And I'll explain that in a minute. So the story is this young programmer in the 1970s, I'd say. He's listening to Now 2. At one point, you have to pick which CD he's going to listen to. I think he's listening to Now 2. So whatever that would be released. Would that be 1970s, probably?
Could have been around 70s,
David
yeah.
Bowie, 1970s. He's in the 1970s. Because it's around the time of the Commodore and really basic computer games. Probably about 1970s. Pardon?
Lionel Richie.
The Commodore 64.
Okay.
Yeah. So around that time. And he...
I'm back from the fridge.
Yeah, you're back from the fridge. I'm really pleased. And he is turning a Choose Your Own Adventure book into a video game that does the same thing.
Yeah.
So you play the video game and he's been tasked by doing it all on his own.
Yeah.
And they play the Choose Your Own Adventure bit really well to the point where me and Kaz picked an option and one of the characters turns around and goes, you picked the wrong option. And like literally says, you made the wrong choice there. And then a bad ending happens and he goes, I wonder what would have happened if I'd replayed the choice. And it replays it for you. And you get this idea of, right, go down this path.
Yeah.
And the options keep occurring and it takes you down different routes and different paths. Slowly but surely, this guy's realizing that his life is being controlled. So it becomes a bit meta. Because he's making a choose your own adventure game,
yeah.
He starts going crazy thinking someone's controlling his life.
Yeah.
When obviously it
you
is.
Are, yeah.
And it's weird, it's like, well, am I part of the story? Am I just watching this? And it's very trippy.
Awesome. That sounds really good. I didn't know it had the options.
Yeah.
I knew it was a Black Mirror thing, but I didn't know.
Yeah, and like I said, seamless. What I will say is, as an experiment and as a gimmick, works really well.
Yeah.
As a story, it's very average.
Okay.
It's very average. It doesn't... It's almost a bit too clever. It's almost a bit too meta. It's too self-aware.
It sounds like a new genre.
It is.
That's... Yeah, that's really cool.
It is really cool. It's very... As you're playing it, it's very interesting.
Mm.
And what they have a very clever thing of doing, and it's not spoilers to say this, but there's moments when the story ends, and what they do is you have three options. You have credits,
yep,
path A, path B. So what you can do is they can take you back to another part of the story and go, why don't you find out what happens if you play path A?
Okay.
So you click on it, and then you can play path A, and they don't replay the whole film. They literally do a flashback thing. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, nice.
Remind you of everything, take you back to a point, and then you can see how it plays out with brand new options. And then it goes ending, and then you get back again. So you cool. can, if you want to, play every single option, which I think, or at least most of them.
Yeah.
I know for a fact there are other options that you unlock if you go down certain paths.
Right.
Because Netflix tweeted, have any of you tried to do this yet? And loads of people went, what? No? Oh my God. Oh, God. All right. Oh, we've got to find that. So you've got all these other options you can choose. But what it means is you can, if you want to, do about five or six endings and find out all the other endings in one sitting, which is what me and Kaz did.
Yeah.
We sat for about 2 hours and watched through and played through. But that almost takes a little bit away from it.
Yeah.
Because it stops being a film then, and it starts being almost like a game.
Yeah.
What would happen if we'd done this? And that's the issue with it. Once you play through your version of the story, you then want to find out what we could have won. What could it have been? And it stops being that film, and it starts becoming just a like I said, it's a game, it's
so
a gimmick.
It does feel different to doing one of the story computer games, like I can't remember what any of them are called.
Heavy Rain. Yeah, it's different to that. It's different
like that.
To that because you can absolutely change the story. You can send it down a completely different route. So you can have an ending that is completely... At one point, you go to see a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist asks, do you want to talk about this?
Yeah.
And he went, no. And the psychiatrist goes, I really think you should talk about this. So he went, no. By saying no twice, what we actually didn't realise we did was we shortened the movie. Because if you'd said yes, it unlocked a whole other story that he then goes and investigates.
Okay.
Because we said no twice... We got the 40-minute version because it sends you down one route that he can't explore. It was only when it went, go back to this point, and it did. It sent us right back to the point with the therapist and said, talk about this, and we talked about it. We discovered this storyline, and then it unlocks about five other paths and five other options. And it's things like that where you realise, oh, that is really cool. But now it's stopped being a film. It's a game. Now all I'm trying to do is unlock each option. I'm almost not bothered about where the story's going. I just want to complete it.
So is the way forward's going to be to just make it give you a certain number of lives or something, do you think? So you can watch it three times on the same Netflix account or something like that?
I don't know. I don't know if locking it off is the way forward. I think the problem is I don't know if it would work. I think there's a route. I think the way to view it is to not try and market it as a movie that you enjoy in that way.
Mm.
I think you've got to completely market it as a choose your own adventure experience where it's acted out.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue with it. I think if you try and make it so it's a top quality 5-star movie, you're going to fail because people are choosing their own paths.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue with it. I think as long as you do it that it's a experience, it's a movie experience, it's not really about the quality of the story more than the fact that you can choose the story, then that's the way of doing it. I think what me and Kaz realised was because it was so, like, I'm being controlled and it really gets very, very meta. I'm not going to spoil it because it's well worth seeing. It really gets very, very meta and it really does involve the audience at one point, very much so. That takes you out of it a little bit.
Okay.
It's almost like how this would work better is if you had a detective mystery or if you had a story that where the choose your own adventure aspect of it controlled a film but also wasn't part of the story. I think that actually took a little bit out of it.
Right.
But because it's Black Mirror, that's about technology, yeah, and it's about the idea that you can do this and you can control it and it is a way forward. But what they've inadvertently shown is this is very possible and it is very doable. I mean, the fact that there, it is, I mean, it's seamless. At no point do you know that the thing is thinking, choosing, waiting. It just, it never stops. It only stops when you pause it.
Do you think it's going to be one of those things? It sounds like it'd be good in virtual reality type world.
Yeah.
So like if you stuck a pair of goggles on, we're in there with them making the decisions, and like rather than clicking a button, you said the decision or something.
Yeah, you can even look.
Why don't we go to
here? Even look, couldn't you? Just look in a direction, because that's what they do with the virtual reality. It would work so well. It would work so well. That's exactly the way to do it, is to do it that way and have it at that point.
Yeah.
And it was good because there was enough options that you were never watching for longer than, I'd say, 15 minutes without an option appearing on screen.
Okay, that's good.
And every option, I think what I'd read is beforehand, the only option that had no impetus on the story at all was the cereal at the very beginning, which is essentially a...
Practice. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
They give you one practice at the beginning. They give you a tutorial right at the beginning, and then they say, do you understand? And you've got to click yes or no.
Yeah.
And then it runs through the serial option, and then every other option, even down to the CD he listens to on the bus, has an impetus later on in the movie.
Okay.
So it's very clever in that way. And you can, there's so many times you can go back, and if you wanted to, watch it from the beginning and make loads of different choices, but it also says you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And if you pause it at any point, because we have to pause it a couple of times to, you know, go get a drink or do whatever, go toilet, but if you pause it, it has the option of go back to your last choice. So if you're not happy with what you've done, you can, if you want to, go back.
Oh, so it's taking elements of computer games.
Exactly. Yeah, or the way it seems, choose your own adventure books.
Yeah.
You know, keep, which is where it starts. It's exactly that.
Yeah.
Or turn to the ending and it goes, do you want to try one of the other endings you could have had? Yeah, go on then, I will do. So it is, and then eventually it does end. Eventually you get to an ending and the credits roll.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, it's done. And I think for me and Kaz, that was about 2 hours. About 2 hours, that was.
That's cool.
We played about four. I must have said we must have had at least four endings, if not five.
That's great. I mean, you get so much more value out of it then.
Yeah. And I know of at least another option we could have picked that could have led us somewhere else.
Right.
So there is possibility to go back and find out. There were two kind of options we didn't get to play again.
Right.
One pretty big one that wasn't so big, that you can kind of then go, I wonder what would have happened if I'd gone down that route.
Okay.
But there's a clear story for where you go. And it's Black Mirror, so it's clever, but it is fairly dark in places as well. So it's not a happy story by any means. It's very dark, but it's very clever. It's worth doing as a first time, as a look at this. So it's well worth doing and looking at.
Okay. Sounds good.
Right. That's a lot of talking. That's me.
You have, yeah.
That's me, that. That's my films that I've been watching.
And that's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for follow us at...
We could have absolutely done that. I don't know where we are. Where are we at? Oh, 32 minutes. That's perfect.
That's loads of time.
Yeah. We've still got half hour left.
Yeah.
So what we did is... this was actually inspired by something that somebody on Twitter had done, which I quite like the idea of. They did it with the 2000s. We will eventually do it with the films in the 2000s. What do you call it? The noughties? I don't like calling them the noughties.
Well, you could do it with the 2010s as well, couldn't you, really? Pretty much all the way through the decade.
Pretty much. I'd say we could do it with the 2010s, yeah.
Well, we've got 9 months left.
By the time we get there, we could leave that 2010s one for towards the end of the year, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Because by that point. But we pick every year of the decade. We're going to start with the 70s because me and Dave will not have watched enough films in the 60s to even start with that. I'm not even going to try and touch the 50s.
Or the 70s.
I was all right with the 70s, but we go through the 70s each year and we just pick the best film from that year. You make a definitive 70s list, so you just pick the best film from every single year of the 70s, just one, to say that is the film of the year, and you get 10 amazing films from the 70s.
Yep.
So what's going to happen is I'm going to let you say yours first and I will say whether I agree with it or whether I've got another one. I've got two for each of these, so where I think you've picked the same film, I've kind of gone for a sub-choice just to make sure we've got a bit more to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, so because I hadn't seen any films from some of these years,
yeah,
I decided to go off on my own and do something different.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Of course you did. Course and did. What you didn't think to do was to text me and tell me.
No, of course I didn't.
Of course. You pulled a Ben. Nice.
What I've done is, as well as picking the film of the years for the years that I've seen films, for each of those years, I've also picked the films of that year that I'd like to have seen.
I like that.
But I haven't done any research into it other than reading the titles. So I'm assuming I'm going to come up with the plot synopsis for these titles. Or maybe you can do some as well.
Oh, I love it. Okay, I like this. This is going to work really well. Okay, then. So did you have the same problem I had for 1970, which looked like it was a really, really, really weak film for year for movies?
Yeah, I haven't seen any 1970, I don't think.
No 1970s films.
Don't think so.
I saw one that I was happy to say I'd want to watch.
Okay.
Or have, which was called Kelly's Heroes.
I'd heard of that.
Stars Clint Eastwood. Yeah. It stars Telly Savalas, so Kojak, who loves your baby. And it's Kojak. About a group of misfit soldiers who have to go on essentially a suicide mission led by Clint Eastwood. It is a solid Sunday afternoon war movie.
Yeah.
But that's all I've got to say about it.
Excellent.
What I remember from it is, it's a Sunday afternoon war film. It is the kind of film that is on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
But it has brutal, not brutal deaths in gory ways, but like key characters die and characters you think, no, they can't. They got to get to the end of the movie. Like he's the comic relief, don't kill him. People like that die. And it sucks you in even though you're not 100% invested.
Yeah.
It's literally, I fell asleep for 20 minutes of this movie. But it's the Americans versus the Nazis. I'm pretty sure I know what's going on.
Okay, yeah.
So it's that kind of movie. But yeah, solid 1970s, Kelly's Heroes. What film would you have liked to have seen from the 1970s?
So the film that took my fancy was called The Bear and the Doll. And it's an animated film.
Okay, of course it is.
And it's about a grizzly bear.
Are you reading the synopsis? Are you making this up?
And a China doll, and what's clever about it is that the bear befriends the doll, but the doll is inanimate. The doll doesn't talk, but the bear talks. So the bear basically carries around this doll on its back, on its adventures, and it's sort of targeted at sort of maybe, I don't know, 10-year-old, something like that sort of age, and the bear just sort of trawls around this doll, rescues it in certain situations, and gets out of all sorts of peril. It's great.
I mean,
it's all subtitled. It's in Russian, but it's really good. So yeah, that's the film that I want to see. So what about 1971?
Right. I know you made that up, but I really want to see that movie. That sounds incredible. All right. Copyright. Right. 71. You must have had a film for 71.
Yes.
What did you have?
Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, did you?
The only film I'd seen, I think.
Oh, so I had Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was on there for 1971. I thought you'd easily pick.
Yeah, I'll pick that.
You pick that one, okay. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even argue it's that good a film, but it's from our childhood.
I think it's a really good film. I really enjoyed that, Willy Wonka. I thought, I've seen that dozens and dozens and dozens of times, and I know the songs, I know that every scene.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Did you have that on video as a kid?
No.
No, because we had it on video as a kid with a double bill with The Witches. It must have been a Roald Dahl double bill.
Okay, yeah.
And we just watched it like on a loop.
Yeah.
Not The Witches so much, because The Witches too scary. It is way better than The Witches, and Witches is terrifying.
Yeah.
But Willy Wonka on a loop. Again, I know it inside out.
Yeah.
And it's not, it takes ages to get to the factory, from what I remember.
Yeah.
The whole story beforehand, and it's really funny.
Yeah.
Love that movie. Yeah.
It's great. Gene Wilder's awesome in it.
He's brilliant, yeah.
It's a hell of a lot better than the Johnny Depp version.
Oh, I don't know why they even bothered to try.
No.
I don't know, because it is a definitive version of that. Because they've got the perfect Charlie, he's innocent, he's sweet.
Yeah.
Perfect granddad.
Yeah.
But Gene Wilder's a really likeable Willy Wonka, while still got a really nasty edge to him.
Yeah, the bit where he shouts at him at the end.
Oh,
it's just like,
yeah. And it's really simple, the bit where he shouts at him at the end, because you've got all of the really surreal moments that happen before, and you've got the bits where he has been nasty and the bits where people have died and he's been a bit clever with it.
Yeah.
But then you almost, it's just an office.
No one dies in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Kind of. You never see him again.
True, but they, I don't think they die.
Never says anything. You never see him again. You never see him again. One point was that he'll be pressed, and she wasn't it about Augustus Gloop, and it says, "Oh my God, he'll be squished to pieces. Impossible. Never going to happen. Why? Well, it doesn't go to the pressing room. It goes to the boiling room." And it's just lines like that where it's just brutally honest, and just he's a great Willy Wonka. I will leave that for 1971. So we've got Kelly's Heroes and Willy Wonka so far.
Excellent.
Couldn't have two more different movies.
No.
1972.
Well, no, hang on. The films of the year that I wanted to see from
1971. Oh, sorry, you've done it for every year.
Every year.
I can't wait to see it.
So this was the original version of the TV show that they went on to make later in the decade. And it's about a rich entrepreneur that spends a lot of money on tech and becomes some sort of hero. And sort of goes around rescuing the friends and saving the world effectively.
Right.
And it's the Million Dollar Duck, it's called. And it stars Sandy Duncan.
Of course it does.
And who's tremendous as the duck.
Well,
absolutely tremendous.
Yeah.
And
typecast, unfortunately, only played ducks after that.
Yeah.
So I think she was Ed the Duck for a while.
Yeah.
Scrooge McDuck for a bit. She was Scrooge McDuck. She was also Howard the Duck from Marvel.
Yeah.
In both the original and the remake they made recently.
And she also played Ed the Duck in Saturday Morning TV with Andy Peters.
Yeah. I mean, I just said that one, but that's fine.
Okay. I wasn't listening to what you said.
I know you were.
I was trying to think of other ducks.
And the Mighty Ducks. She played every single one of the Mighty Ducks.
All of the ducks.
Except Emilio Estevez. So that's what's incredible about, what was her name?
Sandy Duncan.
I only know her as Ed.
I think it's actually a man as well, but we'll go with that. But yeah, whatever.
It transcends gender.
It does.
That's what it was.
So does the next one, actually.
Of course it does. Okay, so 72. Did you have anything for 72?
No, never seen anything in 72. You can see why I started making
up
films.
I'm beginning to wonder whether I should just sue my real films and you just do the ones you haven't seen. I mean, there was two. There was the choice I wanted to make and the choice I had to make for 72.
Okay.
The choice I had to make was The Godfather. One of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah.
It's epic. It's amazing. There's probably as a perfect story encapsulated in one movie about someone's fall into crime and getting proper taken by crime when they just don't want to be involved whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's got surprises, it's got amazing lines. Marlon Brando's incredible in it. But the other one's Deliverance.
Yeah.
Which I watched as a kid and was terrified by. And it's not even really a horror, it's a survival movie. But the bit where the hillbillies, for lack of a better word, attack Burt Reynolds and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
It's just scary. I've never seen it since because it is so terrifying, that moment. Right. So Godfather's the film I had to pick. But
what did you want to pick?
Deliverance. I wanted to pick Deliverance.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, let's go for Deliverance then, Ben.
Go for Deliverance?
Yeah, do Deliverance.
We'll do Deliverance then. What did you pick as your...
So mine, and I think everyone will have to agree, it's Lee Montgomery's sort of pinnacle of his career.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of person drama that you mentioned before, like quite emotional.
Yeah,
it's about a teacher that cross dresses in the spare time and has all sorts of weird fetishes.
Okay.
And it's bizarre. So it's called Ben. it stars Lee Montgomery. And when I think of Lee Montgomery, I only think of Ben. That's all I can picture.
Right.
So
you know what Ben's actually about?
It's about a mouse.
Yeah, it's about a rat, isn't it? It's about a boy who befriends a rat.
Yeah.
And then doesn't he run off with all his ratty friends?
It's the subplot. It's the subplot of the
of the teacher-led thing.
Cross-dressing teacher with weird fetishes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And it has that really famous song goes with it.
Yeah.
Flash.
Yeah.
So, 73 is... Do you have anything for 73? Do you have anything for 72?
No, I didn't have anything from 72. I had 73.
What have you got for 73?
Live and Let Die.
That was my backup choice.
Nah.
So.
Good song.
Good song. It's not a great Bond movie.
No, good song, though, and it's the only one I'd seen that year.
Oh, fair enough, then. I've gone for The Exorcist.
Okay. I had seen that film as well. What list was I looking at the start?
It was Wikipedia, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was on the only Wikipedia, list I looked at. I wasn't looking at it properly, clearly. I found a better Wikipedia list as I got through the decade.
Yeah.
So.
The Exorcist is I mean, it's the pinnacle of horror movies.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
People fainted watching it.
Yeah.
It pretty much scarred the Linda Blair, who plays the
little girl.
I thought I'd be able to remember her name, but I can't. And I watched it as a kid with a group of friends, and that ruined it, because you laugh through it because you don't want to be seen as terrified.
Yeah.
So you laugh at all the bits and, oh yeah, you said that, and oh yeah, all that looks rubbish. If you watch it on your own properly, it's really scary.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about what's actually happening to her, and the idea that she's possessed and everything, it's actually a really, really scary movie.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see why it has the impact it has. Yeah. Just don't watch any of the sequels. So, yeah, The Exorcist for 1973.
Okay.
What film do you want to see from 1973?
So the film I want to see is actually one of Robert De Niro's films from the year, and it's him playing. It's a gangster, so he's an ex-gangster. He's trying to get out of the crime.
Yeah,
and he starts. It's a comedy gangster film.
Oh, okay.
He decides to go into teaching music lessons to children.
Yep.
But he's not a very good teacher, and the children he picks just aren't very keen. So I mean, he chose the wrong instrument. He's a drumming teacher, so he's a drumming instructor.
Yeah.
And these kids just don't want to listen. He's an awful teacher, and there's all sorts of slapstick comedy around it, and him getting frustrated
with Robert De Niro doing slapstick. Robert De Niro.
Yeah, doing slapstick. So it's kind of like a prequel to a little bit of the Meet the Parents type thing.
Okay.
Yep, so that's Bang the Drum Slowly, which with Robert De Niro.
Which I'm pretty certain. Is he in that film?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty he's in that film.
Pretty certain it's a slave movie.
No. It's a comedy about
gangster. No. Yeah. Oh, okay, then. Yeah, why not?
And
why
that's not? His catchphrase throughout, where he tells the children to just bang the drum slowly.
Which sounds really creepy coming out of Robert De Niro's voice in my head.
Doesn't it?
I'm not going to try and do a Rob Zero impression. 1974.
Nope.
No? Not even the Bond film in 1974?
Was the one in Batman?
Man with the Golden Gun?
Nope, didn't see that on my list.
There's two choices. I could have gone with Godfather Part 2. I do like Godfather Part 2. I'd prefer Godfather Part 1. But Man with the Golden Gun, it's Bond. It's one of the only Roger Moore films I actually like. I think Roger Moore's a terrible Bond, and I like Scaramanga as a bad guy because he's got a third nipple, which is the only way you can tell he's Scaramanga. Genuinely. So how do you know he's Scaramanga? He's got a third nipple. Yeah. How on earth are you going to get his top off? Imagine it. So fair play to him. Plus the Golden Gun was my favourite annoy everyone else weapon when I played GoldenEye on the N64.
Oh, I hate that,
because it was one shot kill.
Yeah,
no one liked the Golden Gun. I thought it was amazing. So
I was a sort of blitz everyone with a machine gun type thing.
I like to lock myself in a room and proximity mine the entrance.
I used to do that as well. Yeah, I used to do that.
GoldenEye was incredible.
But then I just end up stood in a room on my own.
Oh yeah, because it was a terrible way to play the
split
game.
Screen, everyone could see what you were doing. So it's like, well, clearly I'm not going to go into that room.
You face the wall. So you face the wall, so they don't know where you are. So they run into a, they see you run into a room, blow themselves up, and they go, oh man, and then you collect the proximity mines, go find another room to do it.
Ah, you're clever as you know,
hell. That was one summer of just playing that non-stop. Yeah. We played it other times, but there's one summer where we must have just every hour, waking hour of every day, you get up, you ring your friends, we play, yep, straight around there, we just play GoldenEye all day.
Yeah.
Okay, 1975, you must have 1975.
No, 1974, the film I wanted to see.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, sorry to jump ahead.
So, again, I've gone for a big name film. I've gone for Gregory Peck.
Yeah, Gregory Peck. One. Yeah, absolutely.
And it was about, he's playing a, baker that also did Viking reenactments in his spare time.
a baker
that did Viking
reenactments.
Yeah, and it's about...
This was released in 1974.
Yes, yeah, okay. So after the Vikings. But yeah. And after baking was invented.
After baking was invented.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Obviously everything holds fine. up. I see. Okay.
Yeah. So pick holes in my plot.
I'm just wondering. It surprised me Gregory Peck of To Kill a Mockingbird would do this kind of movie.
He was branching out. Well, clearly.
Obviously. Okay.
Yeah. So something going for a little bit lighter, I think.
It's comedy.
No, it's not a comedy. It's a thriller.
Of course it is.
It's a thriller about this Viking reenacting baker. And so basically the concept is that he has to try and solve murders.
Right.
He
solves murders as well?
In his spare time. He's one of these accidental crime solvers.
Oh, like Miss Marple in The Last of Murder.
Yeah, he just happens to be around all these people that kill people.
Yeah, never suspected by the police, but always there with their murders there.
That's it, yeah. And what he does, he uses the skills he's learnt in his baking profession and in his Viking reenactments to help crack the code and crack the case.
Of course.
And but kind of similar to Glass and to Split, I think you can tell what character he's channeling throughout the film.
Based on what hat he's wearing, clearly.
Yeah. Yes. So what he does, he's not up to the James McAvoy standards. So what he did, he physically changed his character by putting a different hat on.
I see.
So yeah, Billy Two Hats, the Gregory Peck film. That was my choice in 1974. I think that'd be awesome.
Billy Two Hats, starring Gregory Peck.
Yes. Yep. Again.
I need to make a list of these movies.
A real film.
Because I need to find out what they actually were about. I think it might be a little prelude to next episode. Seriously. So 1975. You must have had a film for 1975.
Jaws.
I mean,
must be your only choice, surely.
I also had One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Okay.
Which is an incredible movie. Absolutely, you know, I love that film, love that book. But, I mean, we could talk about Jaws. We talked about Jaws loads.
Yeah, we have.
I mean, we have Jaws, it's come up so many times. Like Jaws. And, still terrifying. Still scary. One of the first ever summer blockbuster in 1975, of all places. And then we talked about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as well. So I think it's pretty much sorted. Jack Nicholson. Amazing bad guy in Nurse Ratchet. So yeah, fair enough.
Cool.
What film from 1975? I mean, let's face it, that's what this quiz, that's what this list is about now. People are going, I don't care about the real film, I want to hear Dave talk about his made up movie, and I want to try and guess the title from what he's saying. I'm with you.
Okay, so I've gone for a semi famous name. I've gone for Jane's brother, Peter Fonda. Yep. Stars in this one.
Genuinely really actually not I don't think it's a brother, actually a father, but yeah, you carry on.
There's debate about that. I think in circles
about that.
And
Peter Fonda, very famous actor, carry on.
Allegedly
yeah,
and it's more of a one of the documentary ones, so it's kind of like Spinal Tap. It's sort of a mockumentary.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's Peter Fonda. He's a Satanist.
Okay.
And he basically worships the devil and all.
But it's a mockumentary.
It's a mockumentary. It's lighthearted.
So Peter Fonda doesn't actually worship the devil.
No.
Good. Okay.
No. And he's probably dead now.
So it doesn't matter if you're libeling his name. Exactly. Slander his name. That's not a problem. Yeah. Carry on. Yeah.
He's a Satanist, and he worships the devil, and he dresses up as the devil quite often,
but
he's also a university lecturer.
Does he dress up as the devil while he lectures university?
Yes, he does. Yes, so he's a sociology lecturer at university, which is kind of a bad choice, really, if you're a Satanist that dresses up the devil.
Yes.
It's a film about him doing his lectures dressed as the devil. So the film's called Race with the Devil. And it's basically about him talking about the racial issues at the time, dressed as the devil. And it's all deadpan.
That's what you went with?
Yep.
The film's called Race with the Devil.
Yep.
And you went with a sociology lecturer who dresses as a devil to give his lectures, rather than anything to do with the act of being quicker than somebody else to a finish line.
I'm not making these up.
Of course you are. I'm stupid.
I can't do anything about it.
Of course you are. That's exactly right. You're right. 1976. Unbelievable. 1976.
Rocky?
Yeah, I had The Omen.
Oh, okay.
Because I knew you'd have Rocky.
Yeah, Rocky's not a great film, but it's the only one. Well, you're wrong.
Stop that. You're wrong.
No, because we went through this.
We did go through this. It's not aged well.
Classic, genre defining, but not a great film.
The Omen's aged very well. The Omen's still as scary as it ever was.
I'm sure I have seen that, but I can't remember it.
The Omen's that's more. I tell you a phrase that people don't use anymore to describe movies is a chiller. Is a chilling movie, one that's not overtly scary and terrifying, but one that just freaks you out.
Okay.
And The Omen's like that. The Omen's not got. It has got moments that are fairly freaky, but it doesn't scare you witless. It's not like The Exorcist, where the stuff happening on screen's like, oh my god, that's terrible.
Yeah.
This has just got implied terror all the way through.
Yeah.
And it just works so well. The idea of just a, you know, have I given birth to the son of Satan? It's like, well, yeah. And as a parent, we've all been there.
Yeah.
So, The Omen in 1976.
Okay.
Right.
So the film I'd like to have seen from that year was a superhero film, one of the early superhero films, and it was
earlier than Superman.
I think it was. Yeah,
yeah. Well, 1978 was Superman, but yeah, carry on.
So this was sort of gave the idea for Superman films. Obviously, the Superman comics been around for a long time.
Been around, yeah.
But yeah, this was the idea of putting them into the movies.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't need to go into any detail about this. It's fairly common film, well known film.
Yeah.
So it was the one about the triplets, the superhero triplets, and it's called Mother Jugs and Speed, and that's what I want to see.
No, sorry, it was called Mother Jugs and Speed.
Mother Jugs and Speed. Yeah.
So the three super triplets were Mother, Jugs and Speed.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Do their
yes,
names?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
So Mother clearly.
We don't need to go into
no,
it.
No, okay,
everyone can see them,
fine.
So
okay.
Everyone knows it.
Okay, everyone
so
can see
Harvey
them.
Harvey Keitel was in that one.
Which one did he play?
Jugs.
Could he have played anyone else?
It also starred Bill Cosby as well, but
we won't go into there. Let's move swiftly on. 1977, there could only have been one movie.
Star Wars.
Oh, I have Pumping Iron. Yes, Star Wars, of course.
Classic.
What can you say about Star Wars? That hasn't been said 1,000 times before already. It's Star Wars. But genuinely, have you seen Pumping Iron?
Mm.
Have you?
I've seen bits of it on your recommendation, from John Lee's recommendation.
Brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Brilliant as long as you view the fact that it is absolutely terrible, but brilliant movie. No, it's genuinely, there's proper heart in there, there's decent characters, but if you've never even heard of Pumping Iron, it is the documentary that helped launch Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's about Mr. Universe competitions.
Yeah.
And it's got Lou Ferrigno, who would then go on to be the Incredible Hulk in the TV show, and loads of other very famous Mr. Universes, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was at the end of his bodybuilding career going into movies. He might have even done things like Conan by this point.
I don't think he had, because I saw that on the list of one of the years, and it was one of the years where there was something else that came out that I got ahead of it.
So Conan comes out later.
It could have been. It was around this time,
certainly. Yeah. So it might be, yeah. So Pumping Iron just follows what it takes to be a bodybuilder and the lifestyle and the competition. And it ends up being Arnie versus Lou Ferrigno and who's going to win.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting and funny and silly and stupid. But because John Lee, we've mentioned a few times, and has his own podcast, Ask John Lee. Go find it. Definitely go find it. But not if you're easily offended. And he loves it so much that I must have sat down to watch it with him about 4 or 5 times.
Oh, dear.
I've seen it so many times, to the point where when we had his stag do, we actually booked a cinema screen out and we had Pumping Iron played on the big screen.
Yeah, I remember. That's an awesome stag do, that is. That's an awesome idea.
So, yeah, if you've not seen Pumping Iron, get it watched. Right. Unless, of course, you can see this film from 1977, Dave.
Oh, the one that's sort of two films in one about the awful, awful drug dealing, sort of violent criminal, and the choir master.
I'm not familiar with this movie. Is it star anyone famous?
Nope, it's a French film.
Oh, of course it is.
It's a French film.
Of course it is.
One of my favourite French films of the year.
Of 1977?
Yeah.
Can you name me another?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
That was the other one.
Oh, that's the other one. Oh, I see, right.
It jolts you from genre to genre. It takes you from this violent criminal that's doing all sorts of horrific things on camera.
I can imagine, yeah.
And I mean, you get right down into the gritty. It's set in America, set in the Bronx. And you've got this guy, and it's awful. I mean, I'm not going to go into it.
It's PG-13. We can't.
Don't want to. And then just as he's about to do something absolutely awful, it jumps into a really sort of happy-clappy choir master story. And they've got nothing to do with each other.
So they're completely separate, these two stories?
Nothing to do with each other.
Do they ever meet?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that's the twist at the end. They never meet.
They never meet. So you're just watching two separate lives play out over...
But it's the juxtaposition between the two sorts of the film, or two parts of the film. So
okay.
Just as he's about to do something horrible, it cuts into the nice one. And when the choir master's about to do something nice, it cuts into the violent one. But not doing anything violent, just cuts to that story.
What mood would you have to be in to see this movie?
You'd have to be in an odd mood.
Yeah,
wouldn't you? See this French subtitle movie.
Okay.
It's called One Sings, the Other Doesn't.
And I assume the drug dealer's the one who sings.
Is the twist
drug dealer sings his way through the violence. And the choir master...
Well, he's a choir master, he doesn't sing.
Mute.
It's the choir that sings,
yeah.
He doesn't sing.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely,
yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
One sings, right, we're going to do like 80s and 90s and noughties, and you're going to do this for all of those lists.
Yeah,
now.
I know, I realise what I get myself into.
That's what you've destroyed. So, 1978. Superman.
Greece.
What you missed there, listener, was Dave had a moment there where he thought, I could just say yes. I could just go yes, nod. I thought he might have said Dawn of the Dead. I'd have been impressed with that. But then he just went
Dawn of the Dead.
Then he just went
a better one.
Greece.
Greece. Yeah.
Greece is a better film than Superman.
I love a Megamix. What's the Superman Megamix?
Well, there isn't. It's not a musical for a start. There isn't one. You don't need a Megamix for Superman.
No, nope.
He's his own mix. He's mega enough. Wait, Superman, Christopher Reeve's first proper superhero movie. I know there's others. Please don't at me. But yeah, Superman. It's Christopher Reeve's. He kills bad guys, saves good people. Sometimes he saves bad guys. Sometimes that's what you have to do as a superhero. It's conflict.
It is.
It's, you know.
Well, Greece, both excellent films, to be fair.
Ooh.
Greece is a good film.
No, Greece. I've not seen Greece in forever.
No.
My wife wants us to do a musical podcast. No, I mean, she wants to talk about musicals.
Not like
not
that Buffy the Vampire
episode.
Not
the whole thing, no.
Buffy the Vampire episode.
Though with this voice, brilliant. I could easily do a soul version.
Not to Greece, though. Not really a soul musical.
I can't think of any Greece songs.
Grease Lightning?
You're the one that I want. Right, we'll move swiftly on. You could have had Dawn of the Dead, also an amazing horror film. We talked about that when we did the zombies episode, so go find it. Right.
So the films that I wanted to see from 1978, it's...
What surprises me is how much you know about these movies, even though you've not seen them.
Research.
Yeah, why not?
So this one is it's another cartoon.
Animated.
Yep. It's a Japanese film.
Okay.
And it's about a sort of gang warfare kids film between two different groups of birds. And there's the pigeons and the swallows. And they're basically it's basically turf war where they all want the bread in Trafalgar Square.
Oh, British. So it's a Japan film, Japanese film, set in Britain.
Set in Britain, yes. Yep.
Between two native British birds.
Yes.
But the Japanese have gone, this is the story to tell.
Yes, yes, that's it. That's exactly it, yeah.
Carry on.
And that's kind of the plot, really. And obviously, like, the
there's a swallow.
Did I say swallows? Swallows, swallow, not swifts. I almost said swifts. And the swallows. Yeah, the swallows are, they're known for, because they're so fast and agile and move quickly and, yeah, and do things quickly.
You hope, knowing, having no knowledge of birds, but carry on.
Yes. they basically, that's their sort of special trait, if you like. And then the pigeons being sort of conniving and sneaky and a little bit sort of, I mean, you've seen pigeons.
I have seen pigeons.
Everyone's seen pigeons. And they basically...
Especially the Japanese.
Especially the big in Japan pigeons. they're basically the sneaky ones, and they'll sort of steal the food from under the nose of these swallows, or the beaks of these swallows.
Of course.
And and they had gang names. So
do they?
Yep. So the pigeons were the bandits in this scenario. And
this is a genuine movie. Don't do this.
Swallows.
Don't do this.
The swallows were the samurai squadron because they were so fast. And the film was called the Bandits versus the Samurai Squadron.
Is that genuine?
That's,
it's called.
That's the name of the film.
Oh yeah. My god! I thought you were going to call it Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh no!
I thought
no,
it was
no.
going to be that. I thought you were going to go with the Swallows with the Bandits, and it was just like, this is a genuine movie, man. Don't do this. That's a film.
Bandits versus the Samurai Squadron.
And it's about birds.
Kids film. Kids film about birds. Turf war. Trial Square.
Made by Japanese.
Yeah, made by Kumokiri Niyazamon.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't doubt you.
Good.
1979, finally.
Alien. Good film.
I had my second film. I always have a backup. We talked about Alien. Alien's terrifying. Horror. Yep. You prefer Aliens, don't you?
I do prefer Aliens, yeah. But that's... I think I'd seen Aliens first, and yeah. I think that's why I was.
And so. I think it depends what you want from your Alien movie, whether you want a bit of an action film or you want a bit of a slow horror.
Yeah.
And I prefer the slow horror of it. My backup was Apocalypse Now, which I need to see again. It's a proper epic Vietnam movie.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Apocalypse Now before, and we did our greatest movies.
Yeah.
It's just epic, brilliant. It's got amazing actors in it. It's terrifying, but, you know... exciting at the same time, and Marlon Brando's amazing in the film. So before we get to our final film you want to see, we've got Kelly's Heroes for 70, Willy Wonka for 71, Deliverance for 72, Exorcist for 73, The Man with the Golden Gun for 74, Jaws for 75, Rocky for 76, Star Wars for 77, Superman for 78, and Alien for 79. That's a pretty solid... What I realise going down that list is when you get from 75, the film's massively improved.
Yeah, that's what I saw as well. And then that's... Yeah, they almost become modern films.
Then, they do. They? And films that you would almost mistake for 80s start creeping in. You know, Alien is essentially... That's an 80s movie, really.
Yeah.
And so is, I'd argue, to the point of Superman's creeping in there as well. They get 80s feels of proper fantasy action movies that you just don't seem to get in the 70s. The 70s seems very... word for it, really. But it doesn't seem to have the same fantasy and excitement and action that the 80s does. I mean, when we do the 80s, whenever we get the time to do it, whenever we decide that's the next episode, we're going to struggle, I reckon.
Do you think I've done my 80s list already?
Have you really?
Yeah, I've done my 80s list.
I'll see, because I think I don't think struggle is in we won't know what it is. I think it's gonna be too many.
Yeah.
I think the problem will be I won't know how to choose between the four or five films that will be in that year.
Yeah.
Each year, because I think 80s can be so much easier to do.
Well, it's getting into the modern day movie genre then.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It goes away from the black and white, the dated sort of crappy. No special effects sort of films.
Yeah.
not crappy necessarily, but
it's not. I mean, the other thing I noticed about these as well is, apart from Star Wars and Superman and Willy Wonka, I struggle to find films that I'd have watched as a kid.
Yeah, that's fair.
In the 70s.
That's fair.
Where in the 80s, that's going to play a massive part.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I did name a couple of the kids' films in my other list that you'd have wanted to see. With the
of course, but I didn't know about those. I mean, yeah. I can't wait to see.
You could show your daughter.
I could show my daughter the Japanese film about the pigeons slaughtering the swallows. Yeah, that would be absolutely amazing. The Bandit Squad, or what was it called?
Bandits versus Samurai Squadron.
And I genuinely, I'm a little bit annoyed it doesn't exist, because I want to see The Bear and the Doll.
Yeah.
Because it sounds great.
It does, doesn't it?
It does sound great. So, not doesn't exist, isn't available.
Well, no, it is available. Okay. That film is available. It exists.
I'm going to find The Bear and the Doll. You're going to make me watch some random 1970s movie that's awful, aren't you? Is it animated in real life?
Yeah.
A genuine animated movie?
Oh, yeah, it's a genuine animated movie, yeah.
Oh, fine. The Bear and the Doll.
Don't believe me, for God's sake.
Oh, God, come on. Right, okay, so 1979, what film would you have liked to have seen?
So, 1979, it's a film that really, really struck home with me. I felt I could relate to it quite well.
You've not seen it?
I've not seen it, but but just from reading the synopsis,
cool.
It spoke to me. It spoke to me.
I see. Okay.
It was about obviously it was before the days of sort of modern media. It was about two journalists that would sit and sort of deliberate about issues, serious issues affecting modern day life. And then every couple of weeks they'd publish this newspaper article about their thoughts and their opinions.
Right.
They were drunk.
They
were always drunk.
Always drunk.
Always
doing
drunk
it.
Doing it.
Right.
They'd socially get together and try and create this newspaper article.
Okay.
Every other week. So that was called Meetings with Remarkable Men.
All right. And
yeah, it just really spoke to me. Really spoke to me. And Ben's just tweaked what I was on about.
Oh, because when you first said it, I thought, that's a really crappy punchline to that joke. But no, we've got it now. That's nice. Okay. So, Meetings with Remarkable Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So subscribe to the Times.
Yep. Okay then. So that's our 1970s list. There's only one thing left. I can't believe that after relaunching the podcast with episode 2, we did a poll. The poll was about which movie cliche would you want to get rid of? We voted. I did something different this time. I didn't put whose it was on purpose, because I didn't want anyone who maybe hadn't listened to the podcast to vote based on who they knew. Yeah. And the two movie cliches, one was hackers never use a mouse when they're doing hacking in films. It drives them mad. And the other one, Dave doesn't even really hate, he just picked out of his ass, is it's always raining in horror films. It's fucking rubbish. So
thank you, listeners.
Dave won the podcast poll. I can't believe it. I thought I was a shoo-in. I'm annoyed that you didn't. It's not even close.
No.
Do you remember when we did the Oscars one and you won the, I won that there should be a should be an award for CGI, and you had a Stuntman award, which is genuinely a good award, and I won it.
Yeah.
This is how that must have felt for you.
That's fair.
Because this is rubbish.
That's fair.
So now we've got to do a forfeit. Now, a forfeit could be anything from a acting monologue, which we used to do previous seasons, to anything else. We've opened it up now. The forfeit can be that Dave can decide that I have got to do something perhaps for the next episode, maybe a future mm-hmm. episode, if I can't get it done for the next episode or it doesn't fit that way.
Yep.
What have I got to do, David?
I want you to make an advert.
I knew you were going to say an advert. Is there anything particular about the advert?
No, I'm not going to limit your creativity. You can make an advert about anything you want.
I can make an advert about anything I want.
Yep. And it's got to go in the podcast. It doesn't have to go in this podcast. It could go in this one if you wanted to, or it can go in the next one. But I want you to make an advert.
You want me to make an advert?
Yep.
So.
And I think we could do that as a running forfeit for a couple.
Okay then.
I mean, if I ever lose, you could do.
Oh, you'll lose.
You can make me do.
Oh, you'll lose. I had an idea for a poll for this episode, but it's fallen apart with your film thing. But to be fair to you, I can't argue with the film thing. It's been brilliant. I really want to watch The Bear and the Doll, and I'm tempted to make sure that happens before the next episode, just to make sure The Bear and the Doll. It just, I know it'll be
Bridget Bardot in that.
Has it?
Yeah.
That's what I'm worried it'll be. Is like a black and white 1970s rubbishy drama that's like, I'm watching it going, this is dull. What, 4 hours? That's what I'm worried it'll be. So, and I'm disappointed that it isn't about a bear that finds a doll, thinks the doll's real, and then tries to save it lots of different times. I'm picturing
it
a doll.
It may well be.
I'm picturing a doll.
I
mean,
it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay, then. It's plug time. All the usual places. Views from the Sofa on Twitter, Views from the Sofa on Facebook, or just put Views from the Sofa into Google and come visit the website. Or put viewsofa.com into the bar and find out. That's what I call the bit at the top.
The address
bar. The bar. The address bar. I call it the bar. That's what kids are calling it, though. Drop by, have a look. We are reviewing all of the films that are nominated in the major categories for the Oscars in preparation for the next episode, which we're recording next week, but will be out in 2 weeks' time.
Yep.
About the Oscars and predictions for the Oscars.
Yep.
Yeah, so drop by and say something witty, Dave.
Bye.
Bye.